From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of January, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulow. He's at GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And we'll hear from Eric Snodgrass at Nutrient Ag Solutions in Daggerville. If you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear our Commodity Week program with guest Arlen Suderman, Chip Nellinger, and Brian Stark. If not, it's up online right now at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day ended at $4.30 and a half. That was 6 and a half cents higher. The May at 4.38, up 5 and 3/4. And December corn, 4.55 and a quarter a bushel, 3 and a half cents higher. March soybeans at $10.67 and 3/4, up 3 and 3/4. The May contract at $10.79 and a half, 3 and a quarter higher. And November beans up 4 and 3/4 today, settled at $10.84 and 3/4. Wheat futures in the soft red, the March at $5.29 and a half, up 14 cents. The hard red up 15 at 542 and a half, and live cattle futures up $2.10 for the Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulow, GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace for the day and the week. Hi, Mike. Thanks much. Hope you're staying warm there in Atchison.
It's a tough job, Todd. It's not going to get any easier either. We just started to feel the Arctic Express hit us, and it's just going to go down from here. So now we're hoping we don't get hit with the big snows like everybody's talking about.
Let's turn your attention to the marketplace. Can you talk about the exports and what they've been like for this week?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those markets that if you've been following our closing market report since the WASDE report and the commodity week that you and I did since the WASDE report, one of the big questions out there had been, will the trade really buy into the bigger corn numbers especially? And in light of especially these outside market forces, and I have to say before we touch on the exports and the details of the exports, we hit $100 an ounce silver prices on Friday, Todd, and we've had a terrific run-up in natural gas thanks to the weather. The wheat and the cattle markets found a lot of extra support thanks to the weather. Soybeans found support earlier this week thanks to demand, and the soybean oil and the continuation of what's going on with the RVO and the 45Z. And so it really was a question, the only really big question out there was, okay, what does the demand look like in the export front in the aftermath of the WASDE report, especially for the corn? And the weekly export sales were not only a marketing year high for corn, they were 4.0 million metric tons, and that's almost 158 million bushels in 1 week, and 31% of that came from unknown destinations. And is that China? Is it the Middle East? Because Ukraine can't supply or hasn't been supplying as much in the past? We don't know. I've been talking to some colleagues in Chicago trying to find out who the unknown destination could have been. But it's one of those things where it really does leave you with the sense that if you put together the WASDE report and the bearishness of that report, and then the $100 an ounce silver prices, either the trade isn't really participating in that big of an ending stocks number in corn, or the trade is seeing this inflationary issue take hold very strongly in the metals, with the dollar going negative on the month, making new monthly lows on Friday. And instead of doing just-in-time JIT type buying, we're going to have end users probably go to a CYA, get it bought because it's going to be more expensive just because of higher inflationary pressures later down the road. And so the very welcome piece of the puzzle here in the aftermath of the WASDE report, and hopefully will give us something to work with as far as profitability in 26 marketing.
So which side of that issue do you land on? Is it inflationary or is it that other side of the marketplace?
I'll follow the 80-20 rule right now just so I don't get sucked into fighting City Hall when it comes to the USDA numbers. I think 80% of it is inflationary pressure. I've seen a lot of talk about commodity index funds coming back. We've talked about that. But I do think 20% is, in my opinion, Illinois and Iowa are still a big question mark in terms of harvested acres and yield, harvested acres to planted acres percentage and yield. I just can't seem to get my mind wrapped around based upon what my producer clients, and I've had several this week again in central Illinois and others in Iowa and Missouri talk to me about this yield just isn't there. And so I think that the spreads in the cash market are going to tell us a lot here in the short term, because you would think that the inflationary push would last maybe 2, 3 weeks, I would guess. But then if we continue to see a strong corn market, especially without any South American weather issues, then maybe the trade is really looking at a tighter supply.
Now, on the inflationary side, and I'll have to ask this question, does that lead you to think that producers, and I don't know whether you're telling them to do this, but if it truly is inflationary, does that mean while the input prices are high, purchase them sooner rather than later and make sales then later?
Yes, to the first question about the inputs. As long as those inputs have come down, I talked to a producer in Indiana this week about unleaded, locking in some unleaded and filling tanks, and his price had not hardly come down at all over the last 30 days. So broad brushing it, yes, in theory, you would want to look at inputs now and in theory then look at sales later. But I would also argue pretty strongly, if I go back to the 1970s, 1980s, if interest rates start to go up and that works us into a recession, and keep in mind, we just did over 4% growth in the third quarter this week for the United States GDP, tax cuts are coming, potentially Federal Reserve rates are coming, all inflationary factors. And so this inflation, I'm not just manifesting out of nowhere. This is the real deal, because
heating up the economy, right? Yeah,
exactly. And so if you have that type of phenomenon going on, but then you start to see interest rates say, wait a minute, we can't afford all this, and interest rates start to go up, and then you go into a recession, commodities just don't do well in recessions. And so, yeah, you don't want to assume that this is a low that's going to be around a long period of time if it's led by this and we go up sharply higher.
So we're 80-20. That's the 80%. The 20% says, maybe the supply really isn't there. And on the world stage, we're short as well?
I would say the world is more respectful of wheat and crude oil because of geopolitics and weather. Have we taken any supply out of the production mix for 2026? No, but they're starting to generate some risk premium and try and anticipate maybe that happening. But I'd say both Baltic, Black Sea, and U.S. hard red wheat belts are on the watch list right now.
And today, a lot about logistics, particularly for cattle and wheat, I guess. I mean, this storm and the cold that's going to stick around for a long time really has built in some premium.
Yeah, excellent point. And I think this is where the cold storage report Friday afternoon and the very important cattle on feed report, because the placements, once again, have a 10.5% range. We just don't know what's going to get placed at this point when you have that big of a range. But it's nice to have those two reports butt up against Friday's close in this weather, because if the reports happen to be bearish, price negative, then does the market react to that, or do they see more fear in the weather? Me personally, as we've talked about, I'm very nervous about the calving crop. We have to have a good calf crop, especially if we have need for more retention later in this year. Where's that retention going to come from if we don't have a good calf crop? So I think the weather could be an extra critical factor in the price action the next 30 days.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again soon.
Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalCalmResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's take a look at the global growing regions now and the weather in each of them. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien. Thank you very much for taking some time with us, Eric. I appreciate that. Let's start with the cold weather here in the Midwest. We have not only cold, but a winter storm that is brewing and coming our way. Can you tell me about this?
Yeah, so 10 days ago, we started to watch between Alaska, the Arctic, and then Scandinavia. So that bridges the North Pole. We started to watch heat build in from both sides, one side from Alaska and the Bering Sea and the other side from Scandinavia towards Svalbard. And all that warm air just shoved up into the Arctic, and what's there in the Arctic has to go somewhere. And so a lot of it is coming down through Canada. It's right now over the top of us, and it's going to be here for a while. We're not going to be able to get rid of some of this cold air consistently, I think, for several more days, maybe at least another 10 days, which gets us, of course, well into the beginning of February. Now, this is going to be the coldest air of winter, easily, in terms of also how sustained it's going to be. And you talked about the winter storm that's riding on the over the top of this high pressure cell that's sitting over us. I mean, look outside today. We got clear skies for the most part. I mean, it's all high pressure. But what's happening is out of the Gulf, about a mile above our heads, we're flipping the direction back around. So we're going to cloud up this weekend. Still going to stay cold, but we're going to cloud up and we're going to start to see snow overspread the area as we work our way through Saturday into Sunday. Now, there's going to be kind of two parts to this system. So there's going to be a lead push and then a secondary push on Sunday. And what'll be tricky about it, Todd, is attempting to figure out just how much snow we're going to get. What's odd is this usually doesn't happen this way, but the farther south you go in Illinois, the greater the snowfall totals are going to be. National Weather Service has some of southern Illinois picking up 6 to 10 inches of snow out of this. We may get better than 2 inches. There's a chance we get over 6 inches of snow here. But the reason for that is because it's so cold that the liquid to snow ratio that we typically use won't apply. So, you know, you have your normal winter temperatures, you say, well, 1 inch of liquid will give me 10 inches of snow. But when it's this cold, it's more like 1 to 15 or maybe even 1 to 20. So it's gonna be that light, fluffy snow that's gonna be blowing around here. But man, it's cold, it's full on winter. And I wish I was in Southern Florida.
It is so cold. Apparently trees are going to explode. I don't get what is that about?
Well, Todd, this is a test to where we are with our communication in the 21st century here. And what I mean by that is that, you know, there was apparently, I haven't seen it officially, but apparently a meteorologist on social media put out a map that said, watch out northern tier of the United States, it's so cold, trees are going to explode. Now, they don't really explode. Just to be clear, you can get a tree cold enough that it begins to split its bark. And yeah, it can crackle and make some noises. But I, all of a sudden, after this guy made this announcement, and he's a pretty popular internet meteorologist, all it was like fake videos of trees just exploding through a forest. And everyone's asking me about it, like, oh my gosh, what do I need to do? And I'm like, nothing. Like, I mean, I've got trees in my yard that were here during the winter of 1978. I had them here in the winter of 1989 and 1999. I mean, these were also brutally cold winters. And guess what? The trees are still around and they're not going to explode. But, you know, it's hype and it gets a lot of attention, and that's just how it goes. But what is real, Todd, is that there will be a lot of snow from, I mean, I'm talking Albuquerque, New Mexico, all the way through the Northeast. It's going to hit our nation's capital pretty hard. It's going to hit the Mid-South hard with several inches of snow. And to the south of that, we're looking at a major, major ice storm. And I can always tell when it's a major ice storm because the stock price of Generac has gone up 15% since we started forecasting this. I was talking to my boss who lives in Memphis, my boss's boss, I should say, and he said that Lowe's sold out of 200 generators in under an hour. So they're all preparing for a massive ice storm. It's going to be incredibly disruptive. And given how cold this is a pretty dangerous situation for people. So I would rather have you worrying more about the impact of the cold on humans and the impact of cold on our animals, especially our livestock, and worrying about traveling in this ice and snow than worrying about trees exploding. And please do not run generators indoors. There's every year we have a problem with that. If power goes out, people for some reason light those things up inside. And I just read a book, Todd. You know, you and I always talk about books. Last week, I read a book called The Poisoner's Handbook. Mm-hmm. And one whole section of it was about carbon monoxide poisoning. And I'll tell you something, you got to be careful with that.
Remind me not to travel with you after you read that book.
I'll tell you something funny, Todd. I came over to my wife and I said, hey, I just finished this book called Poisoner's Handbook. And she's like, oh, yeah? And I said, yeah, there's about 50 different ways I just learned how to kill somebody. And she goes, I'm a nurse. I've already known all those ways. So anyway, I know that's off topic.
Don't try those on me. Okay.
That's right.
So a couple of things. I did see the post on X from the meteorologist, and that was earlier in the week. I held off until today talking about it, actually. The snow ratios are really wild when you get that much. Oh, and I checked my trickle charger on the battery on my generator yesterday to make sure it was actually up and running. And
good idea.
Is. What's the rest of February look like? We're not there yet, but I'd kind of like to know what that outlook is.
Well, okay, so let's go back to some years I tossed out in the last couple of weeks when we talked. First one is 2018, also 2014 and 2009. They seem to be pretty good analogs for this winter. And if you look at those and combine them, we weren't done with accessing Arctic air during the month of February. In fact, we had quite a bit of it at times. And knowing that the polar vortex is still disrupted and weak, which it is right now as well, means that I think we'll have an easy go of getting cold air in place when it wants to versus those winters when it resists, right? We stay more mild. I don't think that's going to be the case. But this whole pattern will it'll collapse on itself. Maybe that's the way to think of it. And we're going to get some mild air back in, but I just don't know how long it lasts. What I am hoping is like what happened in 09, 14, and 18 is that the Ohio Valley, Mississippi Valley, and like the Delta, it was wetter. We had moisture, and we need that because going into this, Todd, I mean, the drought monitor's not lying. We are in extreme drought here in Champaign County. We've got very dry conditions that stretch from Texas all the way to the Mid-South. And those are regions that need it. In fact, this morning I was talking to guys up in North Dakota. They're bone dry there as well. So we're going to put a lot on the transition out of winter into spring in terms of reviving what has been a very, very dry last several months.
Before I let you go, a quick word on South America.
Yeah, so South America, they're going to be watching this La Nina transition just as closely as we are. And over the next 10 to 15 days, eastern Brazil to the center west might be wetter than average. And as a result of that, I wonder if it'll slow down their harvest progress, which is moving pretty quick. But southern Brazil and Argentina is drier, and that's very characteristic of a La Nina. And if they stay drier much longer than the current forecast, which again is about 10 days of dryness, then we may need to start talking about what it would look like if southern Brazil had to peel back on yield potentials for both corn and soybeans, and what that might look like for Argentina, which I'm sure you heard they kind of pulled back on some of the estimates of the size of their crop there because of less than ideal weather so far this spring and summer. So there's going to be a story brewing there, Todd. I don't know how big of a splash it's going to be in markets until we get the Safrina crop in, but we got to keep an eye on South America.
Hey, thank you much, Eric. That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report right here on Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to it again, if you'd like, up on our website at willag.org. There you'll also find our Commodity Week program. If you can stay with us, you'll hear all of that program on our home station. If not, a portion of it, and you can always hear it all at willag.org. And many of these stations will carry it over the weekend. Commodity Week is next.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Don't forget that coming up on the third day of March, you can join us for our all-day ag outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If it's not there yet, it will be soon. Information on how to register at willag.org, willag.org. This is our 36th annual event. Let's turn our attention now to the marketplace. Chip Nellinger is with us today from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. He's out of Morton, Illinois. Brian Stark joins us from the Andersons in Mansfield, Illinois. And Arlen Suderman is with us from StoneX in Kansas City, Missouri. Let's get a list of items that we should take up. I think, Arlen, we'll start with you. What's on your mind this week that we should discuss?
Yeah, I think now that China's confirmed that they've bought the 12 million metric tons of soybeans, even though USDA hasn't confirmed it yet, our cash sources do. I think the question, what's next for China? What can we expect next is probably worthy of some discussion with some implications for the ag commodities.
Brian Stark of the Andersons on your list.
I think the biggest one, highlight something that's we've talked about before, is a repeat, but obviously given last week's major surprise, bearish surprise USDA report, what that means for cash basis here as we proceed forward. I think certainly probably has to do a lot more heavy lifting with plenty of supply in the futures market depressed.
And Chip Dellinger at Blue Reef Agri Marketing.
Yeah, I kind of dovetail with what Arlen said. I think technically the bean market is at a very interesting, important kind of inflection point. So you got the China fundamental stuff going on. I think technically we're at an important point on the bean chart as well here, right ahead of the South American bean harvest picking up the pace.
Okay, so I do want to start with corn. Brian Stark, I'll pick up with you as it relates to the USDA report. A lot more corn around than had been expected, some 17 billion bushels in the U.S. harvest this year. How has cash basis held up in the face of that number over the past 2 weeks?
I think it's been relatively flat. I think the end user went into the report, maybe focused on spot needs. And I think they come out of the report still living in that hand-to-mouth, arena. We don't see a lot of coverage out beyond the current, seasonal movement we typically see after the 1st of January. The producer did a pretty good job, insulating himself a little bit for what he needed to move in the short term prior to the January 12th crop report. And I think that's bought him a little bit of time. But certainly from an end user perspective, as we look across, it does not feel like there's a lot of deferred coverage. And rightfully so, because the producer wanted to see, expecting maybe a friendly report January 12th. So I do think that there will be some stability. Call it over the next 30 to 45 days on the corn side. The producer has chosen to move corn to generate cash here short term, held off maybe a little longer on soybeans. And we can tie that into what Chip and Arlen were talking about, maybe where the bean market's going to go. But I think from a corn perspective, basis is probably going to have to do some heavy lifting as we approach March and the spring months, where there is not a lot of coverage done. So I'm fairly friendly to corn basis here in East Central Illinois, West Central Indiana, once you get past the February timeframe.
Arlen Suderman, I'd like to stay in the near term for just a moment related to basis. Export market for corn has been really good. Corn exports start to pick up this time of year, generally speaking. I'm wondering if you think that will happen. And then I do have a question to follow up as well. As it's related to the Mississippi River, the St. Louis draft has just dropped dramatically in the last 9 days. And of course, it's that time of year when ice shuts things down on the upper Mississippi River as well. How are you viewing all those things put together? So the export market itself for corn and then the river system in the middle part of the United States.
Yeah, the cold air coming down and the winter storm and the ice and the snow, particularly Midwest is cold and snow. It certainly isn't going to help transportation either, whether it be river or truck or rail for that matter. So that's going to be problematic for moving grain going forward, certainly helping keep the tight supply, and farmers aren't going to be excited about getting in and opening those bin doors either in the near term.
That's Arlen Suderman. You may hear more from him online at willag.org, and many of these radio stations will carry the Commodity Week program over the weekend. Our guest included Arlen, along with Chip Nellinger and Brian Stark. You have a great afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.